This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds in for Bill Radke. President Trump has canceled that highly anticipated June summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to discuss ridding the peninsula of nuclear weapons.
If and when Kim Jong-un chooses to engage in constructive dialogue and actions, I am waiting. In the meantime, our very strong sanctions, by far the strongest sanctions ever imposed, and maximum pressure campaign will continue.
This move came just hours after North Korean Vice Foreign Minister released a statement calling Vice President Mike Pence a political dummy and emphasizing North Korea's arsenal power. President Trump's cancellation of the summit came hours after North Koreans say they dismantled their nuclear test site. North Korea allowed a select group of international journalists to watch engineers destroy enclosed tunnels at the test site where the country has conducted all six of its nuclear tests. But there was no independent outside nuclear monitors invited to verify the dismantlement of the site. So what happens now? Joining us, Don Hellman, professor emeritus at the Jackson School of International Studies at UW, an expert on North Korea. He spent time there, and he held the first international academic conference there back in 2005. So, Don, what do you make of the president's decision to cancel the summit?
My first point would be that it was personalized. It was rhetorical. That is, as you rightly point out, it was in response to a couple of announcements by the North Koreans that, you know, not only insulted the vice president and indicated they would, that the North would never give up nuclear weapons, but, you know, Trump himself had a coin minted with profiles of himself and Kim Jong-un and had led cheers to give himself the Nobel Peace Prize without having done adequate preparation. I brought with me a book called The Book of Insults, which I think is maybe the psychiatric level at which this thing should be understood. But to shift to the diplomatic side of things, is that no preparation was really done. For example, Mr. Secretary of State Pompeo is the person who has been to North Korea twice now, and he is the only person, since there is no Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian Affairs, there's no ambassador and no negotiator. It was his responsibility to establish what denuclearization really meant.
And as I understand it, the process of a major summit like this with two world leaders usually takes quite a long time to arrange. This was being arranged quite hastily compared to the usual process.
Not only is that true, the very concept of a summit was first devised in the modern era in World War II when there was agreement on who was going to win. That's the war. Since then, they've become photo ops, and clearly they are meaningless unless you do detailed preparation as to where you're going. And we did not even the most elemental have preparation.
I want to go back to the statement from the North Korean vice foreign minister. He not only called the vice president a dummy, but it was fairly fiery rhetoric. He said, he referenced the military attack, saying, quote, "We can also make the U.S. taste an appalling tragedy it has neither experienced nor even imagined up to now," end quote. Now, is this uncommonly harsh for North Korean political rhetoric?
That's why I brought the Book of Insults. North Korea has set new standards for outspoken hyperbolic statements that perhaps is now being matched by our own president, who treats members of his cabinet and his opponents in Washington similarly. What that statement you read, however, really means is that they are not going to denuclearize all at once. It's going to be a phased denuclearization, and the agenda for such phasing was never even systematically addressed.
Now, the cancellation of the summit by the president came just hours after North Korea says it destroyed its only nuclear test site. Should we take that assertion by North Korea at face value?
Well, as you implied in your introductory remarks, the only comment I've heard from anybody who witnessed it was that they blew up tunnels for observation purposes and the barracks in which the people that worked there lived. It's symbolic. It's proper. It is brilliant kind of symbolic diplomacy, but it has very little to do whether they either have a nuclear capacity that does not require further testing, or they have a second place where they can do it. They surely are going to hide them in tunnels and elsewhere. So I would take that as simply symbolic and surely not anything more than that.
The on-again, off-again North Korea-South Korea relationship appears to have warmed a little bit. Where does this leave that relationship now that the president has pulled out of the summit?
That's a very interesting question, because one of the major defects of our personalizing this and suddenly is that we consulted no one. The North Koreans were absolutely blindsided by this. They have, of course, Mr. President Moon has earnestly promoted contacts of any sort with North Korea. Indeed, the South Koreans announced our summit, if you can believe this. We didn't announce it. They did it for us in front of the White House. It puts them in an awkward position, but the long-term implications are that certainly of Kim Jong-un and even Moon is that this puts a strain on the American-South Korean alliance, because if some kind of amicable unification can take place, the foundation has been laid, and I think this will be confusing more than anything else to the South Koreans.
You know, the president alluded in his statement to these harsh sanctions placed on North Korea. Is there any indication that those sanctions are successful at bringing the North Koreans to the table?
The president has stressed this hard line, and John Bolton has emphasized it as well. The sanctions that really count are imposed by China. The North Korean conventional forces can have enough energy to fight for 30 days. If the war went beyond it, China would have to provide more. They provide an enormous amount of food, which really just props up the regime. And they also, of course, do 80% of the trade. So any settlement has to involve China, and the most telling sanctions, obviously, are imposed by the Chinese. Now, we are imposing tariffs on China, and of course, Kim brilliantly went to Beijing initially, and then the Chinese, kind of upset that Trump was acting alone, invited him back to Dalian for yet another meeting, at which point they probably loosened their sanctions on the North and gave them some more leverage to deal with us.
Now, Trump left the door open for talks with North Korea. He said this morning it's possible that the existing summit could take place or a summit at some later date. What do you think the potential is for a future summit right now?
Well, first of all, the Korean situation has to be understood in the context of both security and the political economy of Northeast Asia, not just how we deal with Kim Jong-un or how President Trump gets on with him.
Yeah.
And so the answer to your question really involves giving priority and sophistication to our overall policy toward that region. And we've got a lot of work to do to adjust that, especially with China, as well as our allies in Japan, as well as South Korea. The future possibility of this would require not just adjusting to the personality of Kim, but to this broader issue.
Don Hellman, Professor Emeritus at the Jackson School of International Studies at the University of Washington, telling us what happens now that Trump has canceled the summit with North Korea. Don, thanks so much for coming by. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Up ahead, a federal court has ruled that President Trump has violated the First Amendment rights of people he banned on Twitter. I'm Ross Reynolds in for Bill Radke. It's The Record.